with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Hello, everybody. Good evening, good evening, good evening, everybody, wherever you are on the planet at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim who you are and have always been. Very happy to be with you here this evening and every other Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and every other time in between. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I just invite you to visit that website. It's www.pbsradio.com/ Reclaiming Authenticity. That's all one word right there. So www.bbsradio.com/ Reclaiming Authenticity. And as always, these broadcasts are podcasted in case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. And they are also now available for download on Audible and Amazon Music. And as always, if you would like to be part of the show, I invite you to call in. That number is 888-627-6008, and it's 888-627-6008. And just invite you to please do so, because I would really like to hear what's on your heart regarding tonight's subject, dynamic alchemy in today's world. Well, now in my fifth year with BBS Radio, these broadcasts have always focused from day one. They have always focused on the continued integration of spirituality and our mental health, all within the greater context of our relationships, relationships that we have with ourselves, others, and God or the divine. And this integration of our spirituality and our mental health is very essential. Because at any given moment, it's our mind's job to pretty much interpret what we take in through our senses. And yet, based on our previous experiences or education levels or upbringing and so forth, our mind's interpretations of our experiences really fail to capture a more accurate understanding of, let's say, the deeper lessons out there or the deeper realities and the greater truths. You know, the mind is just very, very limited in doing that. Or as my Hindi teachers have always asked the question, why are we then given the mind and then also the intellect? That is, with the impurities of ignorance and desires and related selfish actions, why are we given the mind and the intellect? The answer is that God has given us the mind, the intellect, and the ego to overcome this illusion of separation from God. In fact, it is the intellect that powers us to wonder and question what we have perceived as truth. But it is the intellect that strives to be with God, becoming more aware of the beauty that was previously unknown to it. And even the Apostle Paul, you know, speaks on this when he wrote in the 12th chapter of the book of Romans in the Bible. He says, "Do not conform anymore to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." Okay, so that's where the intellect comes in. And so engaging in spiritual practices like meditation, the intellect then identifies itself with God and absorbs this refined light into its soul as the impurities of the mind and the ego are burned away, leaving us empowered to live in this world as pure souls. And here's a great example of this transformation. Meditate on the significant difference between society's definition of love, let's say, which is conditional and perhaps more familiar to us, versus the godly or divine love. You see, we often use this term, I love you, or I love this, or I love that, because love, as our limited understanding, is really conditional because it places a temporary, just unchanging, as it just, it just struggles as it goes back and forth of conflicting emotions that the mind creates, such as envy, jealousy, hatred. And I'm sure many of us have heard the saying, if you truly love me, then you will do this and such. Or if you really want to be with the in crowd, then you'll need to buy whatever. I mean, can't you hear the manipulation and conditions couched in this so-called love language? But this is the role of the intellect, to be able to discern truth from non-truth and to move itself away from such, just such ignorance. However, godly or divine love is a love that's not entangled in the human emotions of the mind, which is based on conditions and manipulations. But rather, divine love is eternal and not conditional, and helps us to purify our minds by recognizing only that which is divine in all. And I get it, because I deal with this all the time. I realize that there are thousands, if not millions, of people out there who cannot just simply comprehend love, let alone divine love, because just being so enthralled in conditions, or whenever love was tossed about, that they grew up with this distorted image of love as being very painful, love being very distorted in terms of destructive, and very manipulative, and so forth. And so a lot of people struggle with, when you say love, what does that mean? Because perhaps in my experiences, I equate love with pain, or love with disappointment, and so forth. And yet, divine love is eternal. It's not conditional. It helps to purify those wounds in us. It helps to purify our minds by recognizing only that which is divine in all, especially you. And there are some very specific meditative questions that we should all ask ourselves at any given day, any given situation, which are, what in me has created this perception of the mind, or this reaction or distortion, so that I can better understand where my healing and transformation are still needed? Or what are the lessons I still need to learn? Or what are the negative psychological, emotional, or spiritual patterns I need to reframe so that my intellect absorbs the divine light into the soul as the impurities of the mind and ego are burned away, leaving me more empowered to live in this world as a pure soul, as I said? See, this is what I spoke about in the last broadcast, whereby paying attention to our karmic wounds, let's say, or our maladaptive behaviors and distorted thinking. All these things have something to teach us if we're open and willing to transform into something better. Because, basically, this is what reclaiming authenticity is really all about. It actually can be summed up in one word, namaste, which, roughly translated, because I see myself as a soul of light, this allows me to greet your lighted soul of who you are, even if you have yet to see it in yourself. That's the power of namaste. That is the power transformation, because I see myself as a soul of light. This allows me to see you as a lighted soul. The difficulty then is often finding the courage to discover the sacred, which has always been us. And your sacredness is often communicated at times through your giftedness, or your graces, your skills, or your uniqueness that you come into the world with. It's this hachatas. It's what the Scottish Franciscan John Duns Scotus coined as thisness. And we all have this hachatas. And especially now, the world needs people who will begin to value and honor one another's uniqueness, a thisness, hachatas. Well, we have just come through some very interesting 3 weeks, full of interesting energies and opportunities. And I just want to ask you, how are you doing? Did you survive it okay? Because, last month we had Halloween, and then after that we had a full moon last week, which is also called, ironically, the Beaver Moon, which comes from the Farmer's Almanac, which also points to a time when the beavers will begin to reinforce their inhabitants, let's say, their homes, after they have now spent much time storing food for the winter. And then we turned our clocks back 1 hour. And on top of all of this, we had a presidential election. And just when you thought things were going to calm down, we had an 11/11 portal, which is believed to usher in tremendous energy and transformation. So if you happen to feel a little out of sorts, okay. All I can tell you is if you haven't done so already, fasten those spiritual seatbelts and hang on. Do so now. Now, this doesn't mean that we have no choice but to be caught up in feeling out of control. That's not what I'm saying here. It's just the opposite. We can be very intentional to be a calming presence every day, and not just for ourselves. And when you think about it, we can remain as a life-giving presence for others. And when we're able to do this, we are engaged in the work of transmutation or alchemy. And ironically, we learned this very early on in life, even though it wasn't necessarily taught to us as alchemy. Okay, so for example, did anybody out there in internet radio land ever have a chemistry set as a kid? Yeah, maybe nothing to brag about, but the kit had maybe a little microscope or some glass slides, a glass beaker, and a small flask or tongs, and maybe even a little eyedropper. And we had fun mixing colors to see what we would get, or we would find a blade of grass and hold it under the microscope or and take a look at the different cells that we could see, or a little drop of blood or something. Or maybe, with our chemistry set, we would have done simple experiments, such as adding vinegar to baking soda and watching the fizz and foam as the hydrogen ions in the vinegar react with the sodium and bicarbonate ions. And also, perhaps we had fun mixing food coloring together to get a whole new color, such as mixing red and blue to get purple. Or maybe we mixed white and black colors to get gray. Or moving out of the realm of the chemistry set, about the times when you stirred in chocolate powdered mix into your milk. And just one sip should have told us that an alchemy had taken place. Something new was created. You see, alchemy and transformation are occurring all around us every day. And another example is just we can look around us this time of the year and just notice how leaves are changing. This too is alchemy. And the change in the amount of sunlight affects the photosynthesis in the leaves by turning them from, let's say, green to a yellow or red or even blue or purple. And eventually, as alchemy continues, the leaves turn brown, they wither, they die, they disintegrate, and then they return to nourish the soil, all to repeat this process over and over again with every spring, every summer, every fall, and then back to winter. Well, if you recall from a previous broadcast, this alchemy was the main emphasis in the story of the fall of Freddy the Leaf. Okay, I hope you have your copy. All right. Christmas is coming up, so if you're into stocking stuffers, it may not fit inside a stocking, but it makes a great present anyway. The fall of Freddy the Leaf. And based on that, all the elements of fire and wind and water and earth all have a hand in alchemy in our lives. Even within our own digestive system, whenever we eat or drink, our gastric juices break down the food so that it can be absorbed as nutrients or fuel or energy for us to go about our everyday lives. And we all know that whatever is not absorbed, our bodies eventually pass it on down the road and eliminate it. Well, modern day chemistry has enjoyed a long history of development that stretches back to ancient Egypt. And back then, they did call it alchemy. The process of taking something ordinary and turning it into something extraordinary, sometimes in a way that just simply cannot be explained. But the transformation is real. You see, alchemy's name is derived from this ancient art of transformation, in which alchemists attempted to transform, let's say, a lower base metal, such as lead or copper or nickel and zinc, and transforming it into gold. And gold was and is seen as the perfect metal, and all the other metals out there were seen as less than perfect. And this was an idea that was very popular among Western alchemists. It was also a very popular idea indeed that these lower metals could be transmuted into gold, employing a substance known as the Philosopher's Stone. And the Philosopher's Stone is a legendary substance, allegedly capable of turning inexpensive metals into gold. And it was sometimes believed to be an elixir of life, useful for rejuvenation and possibly for achieving immortality. And if you've ever read my favorite book, The Alchemist, it mentions this process several times, with some very interesting twists along the way, which I won't spoil for you. But the ancient Egyptians were not the only ones who practiced the art of alchemy. Alchemy was going on in ancient Greece and China and India, and they also had their distinct forms of alchemy. But by the 8th century AD, Arabians are believed to have brought alchemy to Spain, and then it just made its way throughout the rest of Europe. But by the 16th century, the alchemists in Europe had started to separate into two groups. The first group focused on the discovery of new compounds and their reactions, leading to what is now the science of chemistry. The second group continued to look at the more spiritual, metaphysical side of alchemy, continuing the search for immortality, or in other words, the elixir of life. And while physical alchemy is concerned with altering and transforming the properties within matter, spiritual alchemy is concerned with freeing our spiritual selves, which are trapped within us by the unrefined parts of ourselves, such as our fears or our personal beliefs or self-loathing. Everything that we believe and just we cling to that we think is true, but it's not really. Okay, so spiritual alchemy is concerned with freeing your spiritual self, which is trapped within you by those unrefined parts of yourself. And spiritual alchemy is vastly more multifaceted. So, in other words, let's say that we already identify ourselves as a mind, body, and the personal me, or I. And yet, there's a greater truth with a capital T that has yet to be realized because we have yet to dissolve the impurities of the mind, which is then pulled in the direction of the senses, what we see and smell and taste and touch and so forth and hear. And perhaps the most fascinating aspect of spiritual alchemy is its purpose: to free us from core wounds. Our core wounds are just negative core beliefs, any kind of soul loss, and other self-destructive personality structures, for lack of a better phrase, for us to live freely and unobstructed, as well as for us to fully embrace ourselves as a soul and learn how to walk as a soul in this world. So, with all of that being said, many people ask me, so how do we transmute, or how do we change energy? What really is this alchemy all about? Well, first of all, got to go back to the drawing board, let's say, because we have to learn that maybe in our physics class in school, that we simply cannot destroy energy. We can only change it, which is probably rule number one of physics. And just as we learn how to make purple by mixing red and blue, we cannot destroy energy. Okay. And, there's a powerful awareness tool that I use every day as a part of my meditative practice that allows me to replace or transform or transmute any negative psychological, emotional, physical, and spiritual energy into life-giving energy. See, throughout our days, we could easily pick up negative emotional energy, let's say, in the form of strong feelings from other people, such as hate or jealousy, envy or ego, etc., etc. Okay, but then what do you do with it? Do you just walk around with it all the time? Well, that's not a good idea because it's going to start to eat away at you. Okay, so I just want to share with you, this is what I do at the end of the day, because I deal with a lot of heavy negative energies. So I always imagine sitting with a fire in front or beside myself. And each day, we can set our intention to send these negative, destructive emotions into the fire so that it will be transmuted out into the universe. And we even get this, great little image that if you have ever sat at a campfire, you know that the smoke goes up and that the fire is very transformative because it would change the wood to smoke and then ashes and so forth. Okay. Fire is a very good element to do that. But we're not finished at this point because remember, we live in an echo. So whatever we send out from ourselves eventually returns to us in the same energy unless it has been transformed. Okay. So this is what I do. When I'm sitting with negative energy, I will send it into the fire. And ask that it be transmuted out into the universe. And then once it has been transmuted or once it has been transformed, its energy has been changed, it's been healed. Now I ask that it would return to me, much in the same way that the clouds send rain that are also made up of smoke and ash and dust and other aspects. So the rain falls back to earth, which is a very, very good thing because that's actually life-giving. So I ask that the negative energies that have been transmuted will return to me in very, very positive ways, ways in which will support my mental health or my emotional health, my physical health, even my spiritual health, and so forth. See, there's a general principle of karma out there. And you've heard me talk about karma many times. We reap what we sow. Or we could say what goes around comes around. Anything that comes from us is going to return to us. So we need to watch our thoughts. We need to especially watch our words and our actions. So we have to transform negative energy that we experience in the form of any psychological, emotional, physical, and spiritual woundedness. And we all know this already, that we can hold stress and tension, even trauma in the body, We can hold it in the mind. We can hold it in our emotions. We can even hold it in our spirit, even down to the cellular level. And cell memory holds all of our experiences so that when something reminds us of an experience that was, let's say, beautiful or pleasant, or maybe it was horrific or traumatic, we can be pulled back into those experiences by our minds at any given moment. So to transform the negative energy that we may be experiencing, we first are aware of exactly what might I be holding on to, or what am I even unwilling to let go of? So in our daily meditations, take a quick time, take time to do a quick scan, is what I meant to say, of our mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual selves. And then intentionally send those things that have drained us or disrupted our peace into the fire to be transformed. But this is, as I said, just the beginning. And all the while we're sending things into the fire to be transmuted and eventually out into the universe, also set your intention to receive what has been transmuted to be sent back to us as life-giving energy. So, for example, let's say that we are aware that we're filled with stress because we have unintentionally been picking up the negativity from others, or the negativity of deadlines, or even the aftermath of, let's say, an election. Hello. Once we become aware of these things, we intentionally send that stress and anxiety into the fire to be transmuted, as well as ask that once it has been transmuted, may it return to us in the form of peace, staying neutral in our emotions and embrace love and patience for others who have yet to embrace their peace. So we can do this in any given moment. And there's actually a Franciscan teaching that I really enjoy that goes like this, that in any situation you find yourself in, look for the peace. And if you cannot find the peace, then you yourself become the peace. Or if you cannot find the compassion, you become compassion for others. And this is alchemy at work in our lives. And this kind of alchemy is so needed in today's world, especially in the up-and-coming generations. And interestingly, this was an observation that Erik Erikson noted when he comprised his stages of human development, this theory, namely from the middle age years of, let's say, ages 30 through 64, or ages 40 through 65, depending on what model you're looking at. And in this particular stage, the middle age years, he noted that people struggled with a basic conflict of what he called generativity versus stagnation. Or in other words, how can I contribute to the world? Am I giving back to the world, or do I feel stagnant? Do I feel stuck? Okay, so how can I contribute to the world? And it's also a time when adults in this latter part of the stage begin to look over their shoulders and they see the younger up-and-coming generations coming into their own. And more importantly, we, let's say we who are among the older generations, we have a responsibility to make sure the younger generations know that we see, hear, and embrace them and their potential for kindness and strength, resiliency, and hope. I mean, they need to know that we see them as good husbands and wives, that they need to know that we see them as good fathers and good mothers. We need to make sure that they know how valuable and hopeful they are. And perhaps the greatest lesson that we can hold out for them is to model for them and allow them to see us behaving graciously, compassionately, and lovingly towards one another. This is alchemy. Change of energy into something more life-giving that we find ourselves in any situation. And I would often tell my students to never underestimate the power of their presence in any given situation, not just in a therapeutic setting such as a counseling office, but also when they're out in the world. And for me, I noticed how alchemy transforms lives whenever I would go to the grocery store, even to this day. Yeah, that's right. You heard correctly. I see it clearly whenever I go to the grocery store. It's what I like to call between the cabbage and the kale. But first, before I tell you that story, I really want to hear what's on your heart about this subject. So if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after this short break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. All right, everybody, welcome back. Welcome back to Reclaiming Authenticity. I am your host, Dr. James Howe. And in the first half of the broadcast, if you were with me, we were talking about how physical alchemy is pretty much concerned with altering and transforming the properties within matter. But spiritual alchemy is concerned with freeing your spiritual self, which is trapped within you by the unrefined parts of yourself. In other words, it is trapping, let me back that up here. It is trapped by your fears, personal beliefs, and self-loathing. And spiritual alchemy is vastly much more multifaceted. And I had an interesting conversation with a person earlier this week regarding this very subject, but it didn't get there right away because the conversation started by us discussing the difference between reactions and responses. And there is a difference, especially if you're interested in the inner transformation of alchemy. Think about it this way. A reaction that we have to something is instantaneous. It's driven by our beliefs and biases and prejudices of our mind. And when you say or do something without thinking, that's the unconscious mind running the show. But it's still a reaction, okay? Because reaction is based in the moment. And it doesn't take into consideration the long-term effects of what you do or say. And reaction, for lack of a better phrase, is a survival-oriented reaction. And on some level, it's a defense mechanism. It might turn out okay, but often a reaction is something that you'll regret later. It's often called like a knee-jerk reaction or something like that. It's very spontaneous and it's linked to the sympathetic nervous system or that fight or flight. Okay. And that's what it's designed for. We need to either stand and fight or we need to run. In other words, we need to survive. And well, how are we going to do that? Well, a reaction allows us to do that. But a response, on the other hand, usually comes on more slowly. It's definitely based right in the parasympathetic nervous system. And it's based on the information from both the conscious mind and the unconscious mind. And a response will be, let's say, more ecological, okay? Meaning that it takes into consideration the well-being of not only yourself, but also those around you. It weighs the long-term effects and stays in line with your core values, healthy core values, that is. Okay. So, again, a response does take its time. It's very reflective, and it takes into consideration everybody's point of view or the implications of what the response is being called to do or called for. And this is where as I mentioned in the first half of the broadcast, this is where the Franciscan teaching comes in, that in every situation, look for the peace. And if you cannot find the peace, then you yourself become the peace. You're not reacting, you're responding. Or if you cannot find the compassion in a situation or in another person, you then become compassion for others. And this is clearly alchemy at work in our lives. A change into something more life-giving that we find ourselves in. And as I was just getting ready to tell you, for me, I noticed how alchemy started to transform lives. The first time that I became aware of like exactly what's going on here, whenever I would go to the grocery store, because for me, I could never get out of the produce section without running into somebody, talking to them, and then something transformative occurred. Never happened in the cereal aisle, never happened in the dairy department, and it surely wasn't going to happen in the meat department. But it's something about produce. And for some reason, I always noticed this, or I should say, these conversations always took place between the cabbage and the kale. So, like I said, I was just getting into the counseling therapy business way back in the day. I was kind of new to the whole therapy thing, but I like to go shopping. It's very relaxing for me because I know what I want to get as far as groceries, and cooking for me is just as relaxing. It's something that I enjoy doing, and I very much enjoy watching people eat what I have made them. Okay. And I am more of a cook than I am a baker. So going down the bakery aisle, it's just, okay, I get it. I appreciate it. I'm just not a baker. I'm a cook. Okay. So as I was just getting into the whole counseling therapy business, and just trying to learn the trade, let's say, I would keep on going shopping, and like I said, once I get into the produce section, I would just very calmly say, hello, how are you? I hope you're having a good day. Or if I was in a mood, I might say something like, well, why in the world do we have to discern five different types of cucumbers? Or what's the difference between red cabbage and just the regular cabbage that I grew up with? Or something like that. And the other person were like, yeah, I know what you mean. I don't know why we have to have five varieties of cucumbers, but I'm sure you can taste the difference. Okay. And then conversations we would just strike up and just, well, how are you doing today? I'm doing pretty good. I'm like, okay, well, that's good. That's good. And then it would just lead from there or something. Or let's say, this week, I'm sure I'm going to have a conversation with people around. So what are your plans for Thanksgiving? How many people are coming to see you or where are you going? And that's all I would need to say, because sure enough, the person I'm talking to would then start to tap into the memories of their families around Thanksgiving, let's say, or perhaps this was the first Thanksgiving or going to be the first Thanksgiving without a loved one or without a spouse. And then we would stand and we would just talk. And all I would do is just ask questions. And I remember, just this would always happen. Like I said, this didn't happen in the cereal aisle. It didn't happen in the dairy section. It just it didn't happen. but something about vegetables, I don't know, flips people out. But I would go back to my supervisor and I would say, you know what's going on right now with me? Every time I go to the store, which I love to do, I love to cook, I give them the whole spiel. And I just say, I would talk to people in the produce section, just ask them how they're doing and so forth. And we would strike up this conversation. And before I know it, they are unloading some very heavy emotions, maybe even crying. Or one woman said to me, I've never told anybody this before, or you're so easy to talk to. And I didn't really know what she meant by that. Like I said, I was just new to the whole, therapy thing. And my supervisor just kind of smiled at me and just said, I think you're starting to learn about the value of your presence. And I was like, oh, okay. So that's what you call it. And the more we would talk about, just how one's presence can be very transformative. And what does it mean to not just strike up a conversation, but are you the kind of person that it is safe to have vulnerable people around? Do they feel safe around you? And so forth. And this is what it means, I believe, for us to be a source of light and transformation in this world, a world that is generating anger and rage and contempt. Contempt and strife and violence, uncertainty and confusion at unfathomable rates. But healing is a deeply human and a deeply divine process. And when you and I are committed to spiritual alchemy, it not only frees us from our core wounds or our destructive core beliefs or our soul loss or other self-destructive personality structures, but it also empowers us to live freely and unobstructed, as well as for us to fully embrace ourselves as a soul. And because it's such a deep, deep process, this healing, self-care, our self-care is most important. Because whenever I'm involved in clearing negative energy, either from lands or helping others process their emotions, I have to take it easy with myself. Because depending on the intensity of the energy, I usually have to sleep for a while in order for myself to continue processing the shift in energy. And I have to drink a lot of water. Okay. And I've never met anyone who has ever fully tasted the love and the mercy and the grace of God and not been changed by it. In fact, whenever we do have a direct experience of God through could be prayer or meditation or even a miracle, eventually this vertical relationship that we have with God shows up also in the horizontal, in the interpersonal relationships. So, for example, the more people experience the grace of God in their lives, I'm convinced the kinder and more compassionate they become toward the vulnerable and the weak in society. Now, this is not to say that people who have had a direct encounter with God then have the right or the street credit to boast about it. Just the opposite. I think when anyone has such an experience with God that turns their world spiritually upside down and inside out, they often become very humbled as a result. So, in other words, their compassion grows towards themselves, and their gratitude, mercy, and love evidently extends to others quite naturally. Yet, the more we come to understand the patterns and the history of crimes against humanity, this collusion between, at times, the church and the state-run agencies to either commit or cover up atrocities, and the trauma that's been handed down, passed down through the generations, the more it becomes obvious that both the victims and the perpetrators need to be healed and released from their trauma. Alchemy. And just as people who suffer from intergenerational trauma struggle to break free from their, let's say, persecution or oppression or victimization, so too do the perpetrators suffer from, let's say, intergenerational patterns of maybe entitlement or narcissism or coercion or intimidation and violence. And while it's true that everybody is held accountable for their thoughts and words and deeds, nonetheless, our emotional, psychological, and spiritual pain is there just below the surface. So, considering the depths people go to inflict harm on others, their own trauma and pain is always lower. And the reason for this, again, I believe the reason for this phenomenon is that the attitudes of contempt and anger and violence towards others also serve to protect another person's wounds from being touched. In other words, the greater the violence, the deeper the emotional, psychological, and perhaps even spiritual pain. So, therefore, perhaps perpetrators acted in cruel and inhumane ways because, well, just maybe they themselves were unconsciously or consciously acting out of their own traumatic path. So, as I said, healing is deeply human. It's a deeply divine process. But when you and I are committed to spiritual alchemy, it not only frees us from our destructive core values or negative core beliefs or soul loss or other destructive tendencies in us, but it also empowers us to live freely and unobstructed, as well as to fully embrace us as a soul. So if I'm doing any kind of heavy energy work, I do need to take it easy for a while. I also have to drink plenty of water, like liquid light, to replenish the energy that has been released. And if you're involved in this kind of work the way I am, I just want to share with you that, you need to rest when you're tired, work when you have the energy, and always continue to integrate your experiences because these experiences form our narrative later on for others to hear. Honor yourself and honor the ones in whom you pray for. And for me, I enjoy praying the flute. Yes, I play the flute, but I enjoy praying the flute. And that's here that's the one you hear playing at the beginning and middle and the end of the show. That's my flute playing. Well, let me share with you just one final story that will tie up this night of alchemy. Some people in the remote villages of China, they have this custom that when a woman is to be married, she is given a double-sided mirror by her mother. And whenever the groom arrives at her home to take his bride to live with his family, she is told to first look at her face in the mirror as a reminder of her past. And her image in the mirror helps her remember who she is and from where she has come, because she's never to forget her family and her heritage. Now, halfway on the journey to her husband's home, she's then reminded to turn the mirror over and look again at her face. And this time, instead of remembering her heritage, she is to see who she is, her present and future as a wife and mother. And okay, not necessarily from China, many of us often struggle with our own double-sided mirrors. We may find it difficult to see ourselves in the present, let alone the future, because we have trouble getting beyond the past. And our wounds have a way of keeping us from turning the mirror over. And yet, therein lies being dynamic alchemy in today's world. Can we see who we are yet to become and are becoming? Can we see ourselves capable of healing, capable of living a life of wholeness and peace? Can we see ourselves as playing a part in the world, which many, many more generations will come after us? So the power of reflection and self-surrender and forgiveness and sowing the seeds of growth. This is alchemy. Or let's put it another way, from Paulo Coelho, he says, the energy of hate will take you nowhere, but the energy of forgiveness, which manifests through love, will manage to change your life in a very positive sense. The truth is that our greatest strength of who we are as souls lies in our ability to transform and transcend the physical, emotional, and psychological limitations. Because as much as history has already shown us the horrific crimes that humanity does to itself, there are just as many stories of humanity rising above such tragedies to heal and reclaim themselves as a soul. Well, you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I am your host, Dr. James Hauck. Thank you for spending this hour with me. And again, if you would like to go back and listen to this broadcast again, feel free to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. So, in the meantime, everybody, have a good rest of the week, a good weekend. Have a great Thanksgiving next week. Be kind to one another, and may you always see yourself as one who has a powerful story of transformation to share to others. Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave a thousand comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Hauck. It's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.